Hello and welcome to The Intentional Father, an MLG podcast. We are on a journey of exploring how to grow as godly dads, making intentional and practical steps towards building stronger relationships with our children to help them discover who they are in Christ. As always, I'm joined by John. Morning, John.
Morning, Tim. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice bright morning, so that always makes me happy when the sun shines. I realise my mood is very affected by the sun. It's weird how when the sun shines, I feel better.
But
it's,
Definitely. We're saying that we had a really good part of this, obviously, this course we're meeting, and we're doing like a Zoom call just to summarise things and just to answer questions and to get some input from the broad group we're doing this with. But then we're also meeting in small groups. I think most people listen to this like, yeah, I'm in one of those small groups. But if you aren't, just really would recommend doing that, because we had a really good time last time. And just one really key thing that came out from our group was that, God is a father who pursues us. He pursues us in relationship. He doesn't try and coerce us and control us, but he pursues us. And I was just really struck by that as we do this course, actually an intentional father is intentionally pursuing his children and seeking relationship with them, and is not going to give up even when they push him away, and he's just going to keep coming back to it. And I was just really struck by that, as one of the guys in our group said that, and found that really helpful.
Yeah, and it is indeed. It's a really helpful thing, isn't it, to be able to meet together. We've been really enjoying our group meetings together, which is great. So hopefully people are also enjoying them. So today we're on to session four, aren't we? Session four is being a good man or good woman. And we're going to look about what it means to be a good man or a good woman. And I think the reason that we wanted to look at this as a session is because we know that society is creating huge amounts of pressure around what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. And actually, it's becoming increasingly harder, I think, to define that. And so in this session, we're going to clear up all of that. You will not need to listen to any other podcast after this. It will be absolutely sorted at the end of this session. Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before, haven't we? But really, being a good father is not about efficiency. It's not about just getting the job done. It's about discipleship. It's about heart development. It's about helping our sons and daughters grow into the people that God has made them to be. And so they need to understand, really, what is it they're aiming at? What does it look like to be a good man, or what does it mean like to be a good woman? If there's no definition, and I think this is the problem that we've got in society, there's no vision for what it means, or certainly it's eroding, or it's confused, that vision. And so as fathers, I think our job is to provide a bit of vision, a bit of clarity around what that looks like. But John, immediately, the moment we start talking about this subject, people are going to say straight away, well, you're at risk of stereotyping.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, this is like throwing a grenade in, isn't it? Trying to say, well, what is it actually look like to be a good man? Everyone's telling us, well, everyone's just the same, aren't they? And I think you'll have to remember we covered in our previous sessions a bit about how every child is different. And we would totally go back, if you haven't listened to that yet, session two, session three, have a listen, because every child is different. And so you can make a description and say, this is what an average boy is like, or this is what an average girl is like. And they're very loaded, because, if you look at girls in general, you see a huge variation in how girls are, you'll see a huge variation in how boys are. And so if we over stereotype and say, this is what it means to be a good man, and we go too far and we go beyond the realms of what the Bible says, we're stereotyping, and it's so unhelpful, and it pushes people who feel like they're less of a, they suddenly feel like, well, I'm less of a man. And there are people walking around, and possibly in some of us, where we actually think, because of stereotypes, we think, well, I'm not manly enough. And I had a rugby playing friend who had two boys. The first one was like a rugby player in the image of his dad. All the kind of stereotypical thing, big, solid, quite aggressive. And then he had another child who was very different to that, and really and didn't like physical stuff, and actually genuinely wanted to go to dance classes and some kind of ballet class. And that guy said to me, he was really upset, and he said, I just want him to be a man. And I remember saying to him, look, your boys, they are both boys who are going to become men. It's not that one's more manly or less manly than the other. They are just different. And so we need to be really careful about sort of ascribing these characteristics. It's the same with girls. So you might have a girl who's, you're told, oh, if you're a girl, you're kind of into dolls and you like the color pink and, you know, you're kind of very quiet and gentle and all these things. But what if you've got a daughter who is into sports and who is strong and athletic and, you know, is a leader who kind of, you know, leads the room, if you like. Some things that people say, well, that's a very manly thing. The problem is, again, if we say that to our girls, they'll get this impression that actually they're less female. And our society is driven by stereotypes. Transgender stuff is driven in many ways. It's complicated, but driven by stereotypes, saying, well, actually, if you don't quite measure up and you don't quite feel like you're a woman or a man, then perhaps actually you've been born in the wrong body. And that's oversimplifying it. But does that make sense?
It does. And I think that's the risk, isn't it? Is that, you know, we're living in a culture which is almost saying, if you don't fit into this kind of view, and it's always vague what exactly that thing even is that you're not fitting into, then you must therefore, and it is a tactic of the devil, the enemy, to essentially lead young people, particularly, because I mean, that's what the statistics say, is that the proportion of, you know, young people that are identifying as transgender or LGBTQ plus or whatever, is much higher in that age group. And I think it's because in that confusion, there's now an active agenda to say, if you don't fit an immediate stereotype, you must therefore be one of these stereotypes, which of course is completely kind of silly in and of itself. So, all right, John, so we talk about the fact we don't want to stereotype. So we don't want to, please don't accuse us of stereotyping. We're going to try really hard. But of course, you have to talk about some generalizations, because there are, let's be honest, there are some differences between a male body and a female body biologically. So why is that so important?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just, and this is where we go with the body. You know, God has given a body, our bodies speak to us about who we are. They are a firm, you know, foundation on which to stand. And I think it's really important that we're able to say to our boys that God has made you a boy. You know, you may not feel that you always fit in, you know, or whatever, but it makes you no less of a boy. And just to be consistently affirming, you know, the boyness of our boys and consistently affirming the girlness of our girls, you know, God's made you a girl. You know, you're a girl. And bodies are different. And I think actually, as you say, Tim, it's really important that we recognise that, because, you know, there are different needs at different times. So, for example, you know, for girls, they typically will go through puberty, you know, 1 to 2 years before boys. You know, the changing bodies mean that the conversations might be a bit different at different stages. You'll need to kind of acknowledge as to when there's some hormones that are going, and not belittle and not sort of make, you know, just completely make fun of them for that, but actually recognize when those hormones might be coming through. So testosterone in boys will give them this drive of aggression, and aggression and agreeableness are two personality traits that we see quite strongly more in boys than we do in girls. Again, not always, but in the majority of cases. So we need to be sensitive to that, and recognize that the bodily differences might mean different discussions about modesty. So for girls, for example, body image and the way other people think about their bodies is generally incredibly important to them. And so they're much more susceptible to social media, to comments about body shape and body sizes. They're much more susceptible to what we call internalizing conditions like depression and anxiety and things like that. Whereas for boys, it's less about the body image, but there'll be more of this sort of this drive, this aggressive drive that they'll have, and it'll be a bit later on. What's your thoughts about bodies, if you like, Tim? Have you recognised that?
Yeah, so I think isn't it, when we talk about what makes a good man or a good woman, it is helping them understand their body and understand, again, the generalisations. Obviously, everybody's, you know, I know that I have slightly less levels of testosterone than maybe some of my friends, you know, who are very hairy. I'm less hairy. But, you know, again, there's generalizations. I think helping them understand that and what they're going through is very important. And I think, you know, framing it in that context, the scientific context, I mean, one of the things that the world, the kind of the value system at the moment is trying to say is that really the biology or the science is less important than your feelings. But of course, that's not actually true. Your feelings are important, but there are, you know, you know, biological facts that are important. So I think, as you say, helping them understand what is a good man and good woman, it's worth, I think, isn't it, doing, you know, if you're into this kind of thing, but doing a little bit of additional reading around the impact of physical stuff. We talked about it in session three, didn't we? That's why we talked about adolescence, the five stages of development, because it is important as good dads, as we need to understand where our children are on that adolescent journey, you know, that journey through adolescence. But it's also important to understand, you know, physically what's going on in some of those stages as well. But let's get on to it. So we talk about body, but there are clearly, and this is where it comes back to the Bible, there are clearly differences in roles, aren't there? So there are things that, you know, men do and women do, and they do those things differently, but roles is often where it gets tricky, isn't it? It gets really muddy and confusing. So what do you want to speak into that, John?
Yeah, again, this is a really controversial area, but certainly from sort of my sort of theological perspective, a lot of our tradition thinking about what does the Bible say about roles. Well, actually, you've firstly got the sense of, you know, men will become fathers, some will, and women are more likely to become mothers. So in a sense, there's different roles that we're preparing our children for, and they may look a bit different. So just the very fact of childbearing, thinking about how are we sort of preparing girls for the potential of childbearing. Of course, they may not have children, but there's a good chance that they will. And what does it look like to be those in those roles? And again, this is where people have some disagreements about what the Bible says about this, and we've got to recognise that there will be some variation. It'd be good to talk through those things. For me, in a sense, that as a father, as a man in that relationship, a husband is someone who's going to take sort of the prime responsibility in providing for and protecting their home. So there's somebody who's there to keep people safe. And a lot of that is just simply a result of their physically being bigger. And that's been traditionally the case over the years, that sort of sense of protection. In families and in sort of husband-wife relationships, there were some differences in roles that you may want to then, you know, talk to your young person about. Also in church, again, depends on your church background, but in complementarian churches, eldership is for men, and we're not going to go into the reasons for that in this podcast. But actually, there's a different role in the church for men and for women. So, I mean, I think we've got to just recognise that some people won't go on to be mothers or fathers, and that doesn't make them less of a woman. So I say to one of my kids, I say, look, you know, I'm going to prepare you to think through what it is to be a husband and to be a father. Now, if you don't get married and you don't have children, like, that's okay. Just because I'm preparing you for those roles doesn't mean that I'll be disappointed if you don't. And we've got to be really careful not to kind of give the vibe that there'll be a success if they get married. I've heard plenty of parents say, oh, I can't wait to get married. Or there's a sense of like, well, you've really made it when you've got married. Well, Jesus was single. We can be whole people as single people. We've got to let our kids know that we'll value them just as much and love them just as much, whether they're married or not. But we still can prepare them actively for those roles so that they don't get to it and think, well, I'm clueless of, you know, how to be. Does that make any sense, Tim?
It does. I think what you're basically saying is that that there are different, there are some basic fundamental roles that do exist in society, and indeed to some extent in scripture. And I think, as you say, it's how we balance those roles with not just falling into stereotypes, because what we do is we immediately, you know, say, oh, well, the father ought to be. So you talk about being a protector, you know, father ought to be a protector. Yeah. Therefore, you know, if you're 6 foot plus and you've got big muscles and you're kind of, you like to kind of, I don't know, be aggressive and fight, therefore that's the example, that's the man thing. And I think that's where we just need to, you know, yeah, as you say, unpick that a little bit. And so we're going to move on to, aren't we, like, kind of one of the things we've talked about, one of the things that John Tyson talks about in his book, which I think is really helpful, and I think this is what we're picking up on, is trying to reframe these roles in slightly different ways. So rather than just talking about being a good man or a good woman and then just sort of this vague kind of thing that's attached to employment or attached to, you know, children, etc., which, you know, again, it all gets very kind of confusing. He identifies some roles, which he in his book, he talks about it as being for for sons. But actually, when we sort of sat down and thought about, well, how does this apply to women or to girls? And the answer is, it's the same. And so he comes up with these different roles. And so we're going to talk through those, because I think this is what it means. This is much more helpful, actually, to think about preparing your son or daughter to be a good man, good woman, is to think about these roles. And so these five roles are, number one, disciple. So they have to be a disciple. That's the first role. You need to help them be a good disciple. So whether you're a boy or a girl, you need to learn to be a good disciple of Jesus. The second would be lover. So you need to be a good lover, both as a man and as a woman. And so those things are different, how those things operate, how they work. Again, so much that is contingent on your relationship. So, you know, if you talk about being a good lover, it isn't just about being, you know, so you talk about boys, it's about respect, etc. We're going to talk about this in a bit more detail. But again, we need to think about how that works as a woman. The third one is leader. So everybody will lead at some point in their life. They may not lead a church, they may not lead a business, but they will lead. Maybe they'll lead in their home, maybe they'll lead in their family, maybe they'll lead somewhere. They will lead somewhere. And so it's about helping them prepare to be a leader, whether they're male or female. The fourth is warrior. They need to be a warrior. And again, we thought initially this one might be kind of maybe a bit male, but actually the reality is that women need to be fighters. I mean, you watch my wife fight for our boys. If she thinks that there's an injustice that's happened on their behalf, she will go to bat for them. She's learned what it means to fight. She'll, you know, she's very good at fighting with the utility companies when she feels like our bill's been misrepresented. She's learned to be a warrior. And so her fighting may be less physical, but doesn't make her less of a warrior. And the last one is a friend. So both men and women need to learn how to be good friends. And so if we can have, you know, help our children be good disciples, good lovers, good leaders, good warriors, good friends, both, and work that out for them, they will become a good man or a good woman. And I think that's, so we're going to talk through that a bit, aren't we, John?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. And I think, you know, this is a really good angle. If you kind of piece this together, a previous episode, you think, well, there's quite a lot of stuff here. You know, this is a different way of looking in and hopefully really, I found a really helpful way of thinking about, well, what does it actually mean to prepare my child to grow up? You know, we talked about in session two, what are the things we want them to take with them? What do you want them to carry out the door? You know, what do we want them to be, to do, to know and to experience? And this is just saying, okay, well, that, all of that still stands, but like, what are the roles that they're in? And what we do in the workbook is there are some options to say, well, actually, how might I practically do this? So what are some scriptures that might apply to this role? What, you know, what is a trip that I might take with them to think about, you know, this particular role? What event might I go to? Who do I involve in helping my child to, you know, to become, you know, a disciple or someone who's a warrior and so on. So that's going to be some of the exercises that we do from this session. So Tim, should we just dig into a couple of these just to bring out what we mean? I wonder if we should start with number one and talk about that role of being a disciple. What are we talking about when we're actually saying we want, you know, our sons to become good men who are disciples, our daughters to become good women who are disciples? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, primarily what it means is this identity. You know, what it means to be a good man is to be someone that ultimately is engaged in submission, really, and servanthood. And we talk about these two things as being very important, really, is that whether you're, you know, the key to being a good man is that you are submissive and that you are a servant. But that's exactly the same thing to being a good woman as well, really. You need to be submissive. And so really the submission starts with being a disciple. You are a follower of Jesus. That means your life is not your own. You are called to follow Christ wherever he leads you. Mm. And your primary role is to serve whoever you are called to serve, whether it is a family or whether it is the church or whether it's in your workplace or whether it's in a sports team or any context. And so really being a disciple is primarily helping them, I think, have this identity. My primary identity as being a good man or a good woman is that I follow Christ. And you and I did a podcast, didn't we, with a guy called Andrew Bunt, which was released. It's on the MOG. You can find it on this YouTube page or on our Spotify feed, etc. And he talks a lot, you know, he's a same-sex attracted guy, And so he's chosen primarily to say, my identity is that I am a follower of Christ and I am going to follow Christ. And that is who I am. That is primarily where I am. And so helping people realize that being a good man or a good woman is primarily about following Jesus is really your starting point. And so, and what that looks like, and this is the whole point about, it's not about being stereotyped. It's about saying, well, God, Jesus may lead you into doing all kinds of different things. It's not about trying to sort of say, oh, well, a good man follows Jesus exactly like this. Yeah. It's saying, well, I will learn to follow Christ wherever he leads me into, whatever he's leading me into.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. And you may then sort of choose, there might be certain people in your life. You're like, oh, that's a godly man that I would love to be an influence on one of my boys, or that's a godly woman who would be a great influence. And just pausing, a lot of this intentional father stuff is just pausing and saying, what is it about them? You know, what is it about what they do? What is it about their practices? What is it about the experiences that they've had that have shaped them? And not just the experiences that have shaped me, but the experiences that have shaped other people in my church or my friendship group. And how can I involve them in helping to, you know, engage with my child in that role of being a disciple. And again, that the link back to what do I want them to know, be, do, and experience is that you might want them to know, you know, who is God. You want to know the gospel. You might want them to experience, you know, being with other people who are modeling discipleship, and so on and so on. And the kind of understanding of how do I read the Bible? You know, what are spiritual disciplines when it comes to being a disciple, because it's not just knowledge, it's about actually practicing. How do I read my Bible? How do I pray? I mean, Jesus taught his disciples how to pray. So these are things that are not all down to us as dads, but we do need to be thinking about that as to where they're getting that from, both from us and from our church family and elsewhere as well.
So it's interesting. I think like one of the things I try and model it. So I try to model this by the boys seeing me in my chair praying and reading. You know, when it comes to decision, we'll say, well, we need to pray about this. Let's pray about this together as a family, because we are primarily disciples of Jesus. We're following him. It's his decision that ultimately matters for us and our family. It's about attending, you know, we make our kids go to, you know, conferences. One of the reasons why, you know, we send our kids to camps and conferences is because we want them to meet with Jesus, because we want them to really realize that it's about being a disciple. And again, you know, so all of these things are things you can do, but I think it's about language for me. This is a lot about, again, this whole thing about role, being a good man or being a good woman, primarily about being a disciple. That is what it means. If you want to know what it means to be a good man or a good woman, that's your primary job, is to follow Christ. And so, you know, I get up early with my boys, you know, twice a week, the older two, not the younger one. And we work through the book of Proverbs, and we read a section, we talk about it, and we pray. And so we're engaging, we're saying, men of God get up in the morning and pray. And so it's modeling what it means to be a disciple. So I think we have to, if as good dads, we have to model what it means to follow Christ, not just talk about it, we have to model it.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. I completely agree. Well, should we talk a bit about role number two then, lover? So, how are you thinking about?
I always think of the Mr. Bombastic song whenever.
Lover.
We won't read the rest of those lyrics. They're inappropriate.
I actually secretly love that song, but it does show like the what our kids get, like from social media, from school, about what it means to be a lover. You know, goodness me, like it is pretty crazy stuff. So how do we as dads help to not just counter, but just generally model what it really looks like to be a man who is a great lover, and for our girls to be women who are great lovers?
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, we need to talk about it a lot. I mean, I think, you know, when we grew up, it was talked about less, like in the media and in society, and it was visible less on TV. And so I think there is a need to engage with more conversations. I mean, just before I got married, my dad gave me a book. And it was a good book, and that was his way of helping, and it was helpful. I would say, don't read that book too early. Got me all a bit excited. So I'm not reading the book. I think like I went into marriage, I said to my dad a month or two before I got married, I was like, Dad, we're going to have sex four times a week. I've decided. 6'4". Mm-hmm. He said, my dad said to me, well, just maybe level your expectations a little bit there, son. And, that was wise advice. Another friend of ours said that all he wanted out of marriage was sex twice a day and a packed lunch. That was basically his ambition for life. And of course, that's not realistic. And if you go in with unrealistic expectations around what sex is, around, that sex is all the time, that sex is amazing all the time, then again, it's totally unhelpful. And so I think it is really important to set, to start talking around, and it comes back to your body as well, doesn't it? It's about recognizing where they're at. So their desires, particularly thinking about my boys, talking about things like masturbation, pornography, the damages, the danger that pornography can create in the way that you objectify women and you treat women as objects, and it overstimulates you and understimulates you for marriage in a way, pornography. Yeah. So I think it's having those kind of very real conversations. You're not going to want to do that if your child's 6 or 7. I don't recommend a conversation about that. No. But I do recommend actually having those conversations when they're not too old, because the older it gets, you hit a weird stage. They get to like 12, 13 and suddenly they start getting grossed out and weirded out. But if you've already started having those conversations and it's normal, then in a way it's less weird because you already talk about that stuff anyway. So it's like, I think it's quite important to start thinking about when you talk about that stuff with your kids and talking about it in a really relaxed way. So like we talk about the fact my boys know that me and Helen have sex. It's like, we don't, kind of announce it last night, boys, dad got lucky. But we are talking about the fact that we do, me and mum, we have sex. It's like, and so they need to know that that's part of normal life and it's not weird and it's part of a happy marriage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've certainly, the thing about sort of talking to our kids, it's hard sometimes to talk to them early, but I've always tried to get in with my older two and get in there before they're going to hear stuff at school. Because ultimately, like, the person they hear it first from generally is the person. For a lot of kids, they'll see that person as the authorities. If they hear this kind of fact or this kind of pronouncement from the school teacher, it's quite possible that they're going to sort of say, well, actually, there's some authority there. I want to believe that. But as you were saying, if we haven't got that relationship with our kids where we're talking for it, we're not grossed out, it's not weird, we can just talk about it. And so I say to my kids, if there's a word that you hear or a phrase or like put down or something someone's using, you don't understand it, like, come and ask me. Like, I won't be freaked out. Like, we can talk about what those words mean. I want to be that source of kind of authority, if you like, for my kids, if there's words and concepts that they've heard, and explain it. I want to be the one who helps to frame the way they view being a lover, not their friends, not social media. And that means also just thinking about seriously about our phones, and our kids' phones and the sort of access that they've got. And what they're able to view on various social media platforms, how much time they're spending on them, because these things are totally shaping what they think a lover is. And the time we have with them is relatively limited. So, keep the conversation going. And it's so possible, because if we've got a good relationship with them, then that will make all the difference.
I think another part of the conversation is talking about, really around expectations around sex as well. So, for example, recognizing again that you are to be a good lover. Now, for some boys, some guys, they want sex 3-4, they feel like they need sex almost every day. There's often a narrative, which is that men want sex and women don't. Now, that is a generalization. I think that's generally often seems to be the case from my anecdotal experience. But equally, there are a number of women or a number of marriages where it's the opposite. It's actually the woman that wants a lot more, sex, and the man doesn't. And so I've seen that in my partial experience both ways. And so I think it's having that kind of conversation around, about not setting, to be honest, being a good lover is really about being sensitive to another person, isn't it? It's about, really the key to being a good lover is really putting the other person first. That is the key. And so, loving that person and seeking to honor them and do what's best. And if you both do that, you'll have a great sex life. I think the other thing that, just talk about love and just moving it on a little bit, it's also teaching them how to take girls out on a date, how to treat women. Think about my boys. And we talk a lot about treating, we talk a lot, Helen and I, about how to treat boys, about girls with respect. So, like, Nathan once got on a bus and left the girls, because his mates were getting on the bus, and so they were all going home from school, and there were some girls in the church, and he got on the bus early, and they got left behind. And, you know, but he, when he got home, he got absolutely taken to task, because we're like, your job is to care and to make sure that they're okay. Like, that's your job, is to protect them and to care and to, you know, and in a sense, it's setting up that idea that your job is to not just demand things of women, but to lay your life down for them, in that environment. And so treating them, how to treat girls well, how to treat them with respect, and to go on a date, how to book a restaurant, how to, you know, because you say, oh, we're dating, but what does it mean to actually date? If you never go on a date, you're not dating. So stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And for those of us who've got girls, first thing to say with all of this is, if you're married, then talk to your wife about this stuff, because like you need both of us. So that's taken as a given with all of these podcasts. But if you've got girls, I mean, a major thing we can do is model with our wives, you know, how we treat them. And that's they are watching. They'll just be watching how you treat your wife, how you speak to her, what it looks like, you know. So for us, our date nights are absolutely protected times, you know. And even if it means our kids have to go to bed earlier or get out of the way, then I'm like, this is a priority for us. And actually, for my daughter to see that I'm prioritizing, you know, prioritizing my wife and spending time with her, the way I speak to her, I might give her gifts and things like that. I'm not perfect, but I want her to be able to look on. But also, I want to treat her. I want to teach her what it looks like to be treated well. So, you know, bought some flowers the other day. I know there's some guys in River who do that in our church, who will buy the daughter some flowers. The way we take them out, and just in a sense, modelling what, you know, what we want the boy in their life or the man in their life in the future to be like. We want them to be able to say, well, actually, that's how my dad did it. And this is what, now that can create all sorts of problems, of course, if they meet someone who's got a very different character to your dad. So I'm very different to my father-in-law, and there's things that my wife's looked for in me that I haven't been able to fulfill that her dad's like. So it doesn't always work perfectly, but I think we certainly can model that to some degree.
Absolutely.
So yeah, love it. So Tim, what about, given time, let's go on to leader. So what does that mean? It's thinking about, we're thinking about roles of what it looks like to be a good man who leads, a good woman who leads.
Well, I think, you know, as we said in the intro to this section, you know, I think everybody leads in some form or another. And so understanding what it is to take responsibility would be the first thing. So leaders take responsibility. You are a leader. You will be a leader. You know, you may only be a 10-year-old girl right now, right? But you will grow up and you will have to be a leader. You have to lead, you know, whether it's a family or in the workplace, you can lead. And so really it's about helping them. And we're going to talk some more in some other sessions again about personality styles and all that kind of stuff. It's how do you understand what other people are doing? How can you add value in this situation? How can you think like a leader? And so I talk about my boys, to my boys a lot about being leaders. This is where you've got to take leadership, boys. Leaders don't always go with the flow. They don't always just go with it. They go against the flow. So that kind of stuff I think is important. And again, all this stuff is about being a good man or a good woman, is about being a leader, it's about being a disciple, it's about being a good lover. This is what it means to be a good man or a good woman. Yeah. And this is the wonderful thing about this way of thinking about roles, is it's like you can apply it, you teach them to be a good leader, and then they'll lead wherever God calls them in whatever setting they are. And I think that to me is what's helpful about this. It's not putting people into boxes and saying, well, men lead, women don't lead. Or it's like, no, women lead just as much as men, but in different ways.
They do. I completely agree. So apply that to being a warrior then. So you know, the sense of, we want our children to be warriors. We want them to fight. And I'm just aware of some people say, well, you know, this is just a sort of a manly thing. And there's definitely a sense of it being a manly thing. Like, we don't want to diminish that. You know, you see a lot of our boys, we see it. They want a cause to fight for. They want something outside of themselves where they're fighting to win. Now, oftentimes, again, very, you know, typically in boys, that's sort of played out in sort of video games. And so for some boys in sport, you know, the sense of, I want to finish something, I want to complete something, I'm winning. And of course, for men who never grow up, a lot of that sort of desire to be a warrior, to fight for someone, is played out in video games. And okay, video games have their place, but we want to encourage our boys and our girls to get out there to fight for others, to be those who fight on behalf of the needy. And Proverbs 31, which is really well known for being about women, you know, the wife of noble character, actually the first 8 verses of that are for boys. It's, "Listen, my son." And in verses 8 and 9, we've got the famous verses, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy." I mean, that's huge, isn't it? I mean, there's that call to be a good man means to be someone who fights for others, who fights for faith. But it does apply to women as well. I mean, as you said, you know, women are fighters just as much. We see women fighting for social action, for justice. We see women in my field fighting for access to healthcare in third world countries. We see women, you know, fighting for their children, fighting for their families. Tim, you take on, because I could go on forever about this, but this sense of fighting for truth and for goodness is something we want to instill in our kids.
Absolutely. I think there's what you're trying to instill in them is that you will have to fight at some point in your life.
Yeah.
Whether it is for your family or it is for your church or whatever, that you will all have to take on a cause. And actually a cause that's bigger, and everybody's nearly always looking for a cause that's bigger than themselves. And so I think it's part of helping them be a good warrior is helping them see what the kind of causes they should lay their life down for. So for me, it's the value of the local church. That's a particular calling that our family has. You know, we believe that God moves on the earth through the local church. And so you are called to fight for and lay down your life for the local church, wherever that may be, whether it's in Orpington or somewhere across the other side of the world. And I'd like, you know, women to have the same attitude towards that, isn't it? And I think, you know, and we talk about physical stuff as well. You know, again, boys need to learn what it is to be physically tough. They need to learn to be strong and resilient, and they talk a lot about resilience. But you know, we have to remember that, you know, there's this idea that women are kind of dainty and all the rest of it. It's just a load of rubbish. It's really kind of come from, I think, kind of a very Victorian kind of a sort of picture perfect kind of scenario. Because if you were, I mean, women over the centuries worked incredibly hard. You know, life pre-washing machines and pre all that, it was brutally difficult, like brutal. And they had to be physically tough and, you know, they would work long, really long hours. And I'll be honest, I'm not a great fan of the idea of the sort of stay at home kind of lady of leisure. I just don't think it's, I just don't think it's biblical. I don't think that's really what God has called women to be. I think God has called them to be workers and fighters, and to engage in whatever field that they're called to. And I think I think it's that, it's just an identity, isn't it? And I think it's helping them realize, and men particularly, boys need this identity. I think particularly they need to know, I'm a fighter, I'm called for a purpose, because otherwise they'll find one. And this is where you get the rise of extremist groups, because they pick up on you know, boys, but also, you know, girls as well, who are looking to fight for something, for a cause, and they've got no cause to fight for. So we need to give them a cause. Our job as dads is to help direct our boys and our girls towards just causes.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, agree. Well, we could go on, but just because of time, the last one has been a friend, and we really sense that this is, you know, so important, that friendship is just so key to being a good man. And how many men are there who will say, I don't have friends? I mean, there's loads of studies on this, and so many men definitely have less than 5 friends, but actually there's a good percentage. I think it's about 4 in 10 men will struggle to name like somebody who is a good friend. And a lot of that is because we just often haven't learnt to be a friend. We haven't learnt what it looks like to be in a friendship relationship. And again, there can be differences between friendships between boys and friendships between girls, but we want our kids to grow up as a role of being a good friend. And that means, what does it look like? You know, talking about it, what does it look like to be a good friend? You know, a question that my wife asks to my kids sometimes is, you know, who is it who is a good influence on you? Who's bringing the best out in you? It's a way really of kind of trying to steer them towards friendships that are healthy and life-giving. And there's great evidence that, you know, you become like the 5 people that you hang out with. So if you've got 5 people who have got a particular
physical characteristic or, you know, particular characteristics, you're going to become like them. So you become, I mean, that's both biblical principle, isn't it? The wisdom principle we see through Proverbs is that you become like who you spend time with. If you spend time with fools, you'll become a fool. Yeah. If you spend time with wise people, you'll become a wise people.
Yeah.
A wise person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And also it's realizing, it's helping understand that being a good friend isn't just agreeing with everything your friends do. Particularly as teenagers, you know, like they tend to, you know, oh, you know, this person said something mean to my friend, and now we're gonna join up and be like against them, and like, you know, and we challenge that hard. Like, so when you know, our boys are sort of dragged into those things, we're like, hang on a sec, your job as a friend is not just to go along with the stupidity all the time. Being a good friend is sometimes, you know, faithful are the wounds of a friend, as it says in Proverbs. You know, iron sharpens iron. You know, being a friend isn't just agreeing with everything you're just being there. It's also about challenge. And so it's this whole thing about what does it mean to be a good friend? And maybe as a dad, it's good to sit for you to think about what is a good friend. You know, if you think about if we think about who's been a good friend, I mean, John, you've been a very good friend to me over the years. And we've had a number of really tough conversations, many tough conversations. You know, you're a good friend and we're very open and honest and we'll confess things to one another. You know, we're good friends and, you know, when I'm feeling sick, you know, you ring me up and say, how are you getting on? You know, you were sick recently and, you know, I'll just try and stay in touch. How are you getting on? How are you feeling? You know, can I do anything to help? Like, and so it's helping them understand and communicate this is what it looks like to be a good friend. And we had this conversation actually in our group. We met last night in our little small group. And we talked about, one of the guys said, I grew up seeing my dad hang out with his friends and he modeled to me what it was like just being, you know, with friends. And it wasn't necessarily talking about friendship specifically, but you realize actually we need to, you know, show, we need to have good friendships and we need to invite our kids into that environment where they see good friendship and see it modeled.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Great. Well, I mean, so we've kind of covered those five roles. There are probably others. It's not just that's the only ones that there are, but just to keep it manageable and to be thinking about, well, we thought those would probably summarize the sort of five key roles, and remembering that sort of body and role differences between boys and girls can make a big difference. But ultimately, it'll be down to individualizing this for your child. Your child will be very different, and it's not there's one size fits all. But it's great to share ideas and to share books that we've read. Or, you know, I had someone say, oh, I watched Band of Brothers, you know, with my boys. It was great. And I'm going to try that. Now, it might not work. My kid might not like it. That's okay. But sharing these ideas, as to what they've done, sharing them with each other is really valuable, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's good. Absolutely, John. Well, hopefully, you know, talking through roles has helped us give a bit of structure to talking about what it means to be a good man or a good woman. Using these five roles, I think, is a helpful way of doing that. And so hopefully it'll be good for your conversation or discussions. Keep going, keep talking. We're just learning together. So we're on a journey together to make intentional, practical steps towards helping raise our children as godly friends of Jesus. So until next time, John.
Yeah, good man, Tim. Thanks. Bye.